So I think we're going to try to get started. We have a very exciting program. Amy will give you, don't run, it's fine. So we have a very exciting program this evening, and I just wanted to give a very brief introduction. My name is Brett Littman. I'm the executive director of the Drawing Center, and we are really pleased today to have such a great group of participants and panelists. We apologize about the confusion as to who was sitting at the table and who's sitting in the audience, but really everyone's sitting at the table. I mean, that's pretty much what the bottom line is here. We did choose seven people to give presentations this evening, but at the same time, we hand-selected the audience as well, and it's really important that you are here to help us to learn more about the state of drawing. So the state of drawing, I kept on thinking, I guess it's an election year. That's why we have this kind of state of drawing. I hope it'll be a little better than the State of the Union. But in any case, some housekeeping. Could you turn your phones off, just the rings, so we don't get interrupted? That would be terrific. I would like to thank Victoria Marshall, the Assistant Professor of Urban Design at Parsons and the Director of the Urban Design Program, which is the first undergraduate urban design program in art history and design school in the U.S., and her entire team for their incredible hospitality and generosity in hosting this event. So it's really great to work with Parsons on this project. So thank you. Over the past 5 years, I have been particularly fortunate to have run the Drawing Center as a kind of incubator and think tank for ideas. With my former and present curators, Joao Ribas, Claire Gilman, Joanna Kleinberg, Rachel Leibowitz, and Nova Benway, we've been able to present over 50 exhibitions, which in my mind have circled around concepts and ideas that are central to practitioners, curators, and enthusiasts of drawing from a wide range of backgrounds. These exhibitions didn't have teleological endpoints. They weren't chosen by valorizing one approach of drawing over another, but rather they've been driven by curiosity, conundrums, personal interests, and a desire to maybe to correct institutional blind spots and broaden our remit. In some ways, this symposium is an extension of those investigations. It grows directly out of our desire to make public the many internal conversations that we've been having about drawings ongoing over the past years, and specifically during this time when we've been thinking about redesigning and expanding our building. The discussions that we've had internally have really informed the architecture and the plans for the new Drawing Center, which I can announce will open in September of 2012. Can't quite give you a date yet, but somewhere in September, so be on the lookout. And these discussions have really been central to our upcoming programming philosophy and exhibition planning. In addition, the curatorial staff has done more studio visits and looked at more art than ever. And I think that the observations about what they are hearing and seeing has pushed us to make sure that the galleries we're designing are flexible, have the proper IT AV infrastructure, and also are the proper size to show what we need to show and to continue to explore where drawing is going to go for the next 35 years. I'm, for one, very excited to hear our panelists and also your responses to the questions that we have posed, and I'm sure that this event will greatly impact our future conversations and our mission. So thank you. I'd now like to introduce Claire Gilman, our curator, who's going to talk a little bit about the structure of tonight.
Thank you, Brett. I want to reiterate how pleased we are to see so many people here today, people that care about drawing the way we do, and also to say again that you are part of a hand-selected audience. Basically, you are here because we felt that you had something to contribute to the discussion about what drawing is and means to us today. So we do hope that you will speak up when the time comes, but also certainly don't feel any pressure if you don't want to. But we do encourage discussion. So I organized this symposium with our assistant curator, Joanna Kleinberg, and curatorial assistant, Nova Benway. And from the beginning, we wanted to get outside of the kind of traditional symposium format with lengthy presentations by panelists, followed by a brief kind of Q&A session. So, we really wanted the symposium to be an opportunity to hear a range of voices about drawing and to allow curators, scholars, artists, et cetera, to sort of learn and hear from each other. So to that end, we invited seven people, two curators, and five artists to give extremely brief responses to a series of questions that we generated based on the kinds of questions that we are dealing with every day as we put together our exhibition program and think about what it is that the Drawing Center is and does. We chose this panel basically to sort of get as diverse an approach to these questions as possible. So based on diversity, based on gender, age, style of drawing, approach to the medium, and hence, you know, ended up with the group you see here before you. We will begin with, we will hear from each we will hear from each panelist in full. So rather than going question by question, each panelist will come up and respond to the questions. I'll actually read the questions to you before they start, so they don't have to, they've requested that, that way they don't have to read them again. But you do have the questions on the back of your sheet of paper, so you can refer to them. And if they say question one instead of reading the question, you can look at the question. So we will hear from each person in full, and then after the last panelist is finished, we will open things up to the for discussion to the audience. And that's an opportunity for you either to ask questions of the panelists or to simply respond to the questions if you have prepared responses, or to bring up other issues or concerns, you know, that are important to you or that you are thinking about drawing. So in the interest of time, I'm not going to read out the panelists' bios. You also have their bios on the sheet of paper. I am simply going to introduce each presenter by name. Let me read the questions, as I said I would do. So question number one, how do we define drawing? Is it an activity or a medium? Can drawing exist without a material residue? So actually, each question is sort of a group of questions. Question number two, how do artists situate drawing in relation to the other elements of their practice? For example, painting, sculpture, performance, etc. Three, are drawing via the computer and drawing by hand two distinct practices, or should they be considered in tandem? And what possibilities do digital technologies open up for drawing in all its many forms? Four, how does our constant exposure to virtual space change the way artists approach working in two and three dimensions? And finally, question five, what role does drawing still play in reproducing or navigating the world? So without further ado, I will turn things over to curator Carter Foster.
Can you hear me? Do I need to lean down? Yes? Do I have to lean down? I'll lean down. Okay. So I'll just, yeah, okay. You can hear me? Is that good? Okay. So I will just go and answer the questions. I will answer, spend more time on some of the questions than others because I know less about certain of the questions, especially technology things. I think, how do we define drawing? I think we can define it, I don't want to cop out, but I think it's both an activity and a medium. But I do think it is a medium with a very definite and rich history materially, which it's also, I mean, I think it's important to remember that I'm talking about Western art. The issue of drawing in non-Western art is not something I know so much about, but it'd be an interesting problem. I have a little comparison of old master drawings and some contemporary drawings, but just to get to the point that drawing is a medium with a strong material history, I think you have basically red chalk. This is a drawing by Jean-Baptiste Greuze with a drawing by Ronnie Horne, both using red pigment of different sorts. This is a drawing by Ang and Wardell Milan. Just to say that not only is there a medium in drawing chalk, red chalk, watercolor, pastel, all those still readily used by many artists today, I think the aesthetic of drawing and the history of drawing's aesthetic with multiple images on a sheet, which is a reflection of the kind of creative process, is still picked up by artists as we see here. And I think artists are still basically struggling with the issues of, you know, a type of support, a paper support usually, and the particular material qualities that they're picking up on and the tradition of that, and looking at that tradition still very, very present. So I mean, for me, that's how I think of drawing probably most thoroughly. But I think I would also define drawing by being close to the creative act. I think artists typically use drawing as the kind of starting point, and I think many artists would say that's how they think of drawing, whatever medium they use. And I also think there's a strong linear quality to drawing. Not that every drawing is linear, but I think line is something very closely tied to drawing in various ways. So that, just to be brief, that's how I would define drawing and those, to mention those things. Here's a drawing by Michelangelo and Raphael that gets to the point of line. They're both in different mediums. One's in pen and ink, one's in chalk, but line being very strong and being used to create three-dimensional form, and it becomes subsumed within this sort of technique of hatching and cross-hatching, but line's still very important. A drawing by Vouet, two drawings by Vouet, actually. And then a drawing by Jean-Baptiste Oudry, a detail, and a drawing by contemporary artist Zach Smith, again, getting to the point of line and also the continuity of the medium's tradition. Watercolor by Elizabeth Payton and Jericho, a detail. And then Tim Gardner and Delatour. Pastel, still important. And then I think this drawing by Cy Twombly gets to the something that's also important to the definition, which is the beginning of the creative act. And also, I like to use this term hand to mind, because I think hand and, you know, what people, I think, appreciate most about drawing is that it's the hand expresses what the mind thinks most readily in drawing. And I think you get Cy Twombly almost made an aesthetic out of this. And the fact that drawing is closely linked to writing and language is something quite significant and basic to it as a thing. I also think it's important to note that not all of us have made art. I don't make art at all, but everyone understands drawing in a sense if you're literate and know how to write, because you're doing something very close to the act of drawing. And I think that that's one reason that maybe sets drawing apart from other mediums in terms of how the public or people that don't practice art understand it. I also think, so just to show, this is a drawing by Ronnie Horn. Artists have found ways to still use mediums that we would consider very linked to the act of drawing, such as paper and pigment. This is actually pure pigment on paper that's been cut up and reconfigured, but with lots of notations and graphite. It's pushing the technique of drawing ahead in the sense that she's put the pure pigment down, almost in a painting-like way, but in a way that's not oil paint or with a liquid medium, using varnish. But it still very much feels like a drawing. And then someone like Richard Serra, also using a medium that we wouldn't consider necessarily as a traditional drawing medium, but I think that anyone would consider this a drawing in terms of the way it exists as an object. And then someone like Mark Bradford, who he considers himself a painter, interestingly enough, but he only uses paper, and I think that's an interesting issue that we might want to discuss later too. What it means to, here's the crux of the question of if medium defines it or if it's something else that defines it. And he definitely would call himself a painter and considers works like this in the tradition of abstract painting. And so the second question, how do artists situate drawing in relation to the other elements of their practice? I love this image by Charles Joseph Natoire. It's an image from the 18th century that shows a fictitious academy in Europe, but it reflects the ideology of the French Royal Academy of Painting and Sculpture, which influenced pretty much every art academy that came after it. It was sponsored by Louis XIV, whose bust you see in the form of the Bernini bust on the pillar in the center. So he's like looming over the scene like the royal patron. And then you basically have all these artists around drawing a double academy, two male figures posed nude together, which was a practice that was done at the French Academy. And the drawings are up on the walls, these nude figures in conjunction with icons of French 17th and 18th century painting, paintings by Charles Lebrun, paintings by Natoire, Poussin. So, and I bring this up because this was the practice that drawing was the foundation for painting, sculpture, and architecture, and drawing the nude model from life was the cement of this practice for hundreds of years, and still is in many cases. It's still used as a pedagogical tool and sort of the foundation. So I think that it's interesting that, you know, drawing is pedagogy. Drawing is what people are taught first before they're taught the other specialties of art that they do if they follow a kind of traditional program, which many art schools still do. And then I show a drawing, one of Michelangelo's drawings for the ignudi of the Sistine Chapel ceiling, because Michelangelo, being adept at all the arts, painting, drawing, sculpture, and architecture equally well, used drawing as the glue for all of this, and I think that hasn't changed all that much. I think what has changed is that drawing in the 20th century has developed into both in terms of the market, an object that is sold not as a byproduct of the other parts of the creative act, or a byproduct of painting or sculpture or whatever, but as its own thing. And I think it's come into its own in a medium in that sense. Here's a drawing, a Blind Time drawing by Robert Morris, perfect example of the whole hand to mind concept, and drawing, being the kind of foregrounding the idea of process, and that's very much tied to drawing. And I think that is a shift in the 20th century. As drawings have come into their own, and the hierarchy of mediums has broken down. And then, so other artists that use drawing just as importantly as they don't make drawing as a byproduct. Someone like Jasper Johns, Series of Numbers, or people like Amy Cutler who also do that. And I think it's interesting. I think the market has shaped this as a force now, and I think it's something we've seen a lot in the last few years. This is a drawing by Ezra Kelly. I don't know why I have it up there. I can't remember. Sorry if I'm not going too fast, but they said 5 minutes. So drawing via the computer and drawing by hand, two distinct practices. I know less about this. What I do know is that I have friends who are architects, I have a friend who's my age. I'm 46. He's an architect. He laments the fact that the people that come into his firm can't draw by hand anymore. They've all been taught on AutoCAD, and I think that's fine, but obviously it's going to mediate what you do in a very, very different way. I think you have some computer programs like the David Hockney iPad situation where it's just mimicking, in a sense, what you can do with your hand and a pen with a different thing, but then you have some things where the mediation becomes much more and more extreme, and I would say that's the main difference with that. The virtual space thing, that's why I brought this up. I think the question is, how does our constant exposure to virtual space change the way artists approach working in two and three dimensions? I think that when I read this, I thought, well, virtual space has been around since the Renaissance, and they figured out one-point linear perspective and modeling in three dimensions, which are the two sort of main tools for creating a window on the world kind of concept. And so here's Piero della Francesca and Raphael's School of Athens as examples of that, where you have this very rigorous geometry and also this very refined, highly developed a way of modeling basically gradations of light and dark being the main tool, in a sense, to get three-dimensional form into believable two-dimensional space. And that's really the key. And I think when you deal with video games like Red Dead Redemption, which is, I don't know video games at all, but a friend of mine who's an artist showed this to me once, and I thought, they're using perspective, and they're using the same kind of three-dimensional modeling to very different ends. I think what's fascinating about this is that I'm sure we'll get to a point soon where you can have like a video game in the style of Raphael or Michelangelo, and you can have these things move. I think we'll get to the point where stylistically this stuff can be imitated, and I think that'll be extremely interesting to see. Let's see. What's the last? What role does drawing... Is that all of them? Wow, I went fast. What role does drawing still play in reproducing or navigating the world? I think navigation to me is the thing, because I think people use drawing to think, and they still do. And I think there's something basic about the way our bodies are built that make drawing sort of the crucial beginning of the creative act for artists. So, yeah. Okay, I'll end there. Thanks.
So next we have Deborah Grant.
Good evening, everybody. When I went about choosing or going around thinking about this kind of idea on drawing, I kind of just decided that it made more sense to me to try and look at the ability of how drawing is kind of developed over time. And so what I wanted to talk about was in the conversation of, excuse me, how do we define drawing? Representational marks is the easy way of looking at a tool using a pencil directly onto paper. But I also thought about the relationship of 17,000-year-old Lascaux drawings done on Lascaux drawing caves in France, or Leonardo da Vinci's works on paper and wood panels, or even Robert Smithson's earthworks done with a bulldozer directly into a ground, or even Ava Hesse's 1969 right after. The question that came up to asking about the activity of it, whether it be in a medium or an activity, I would say it's both. The activity is proposed is the concept of the brain guiding the idea of what you're trying to think about from your mind to your idea of your hand. But I thought what was interesting is the idea that when we're first working and drawing, we start off as children in terms of the idea of finger painting. And I thought that, and specifically, it's a form of action painting. And in the idea of action painting, from 1952, Art News's Harold Rosenberg coined the phrase action painting. He characterizes the first idea of the utmost idea of working in the action of space. Jackson Pollock, who was one best illustrated the technique of action painting, in the act of throwing using a brush art, the technique of a stick, in which he throws the paint within the air and at the same time allowing it, whether it lines arbitrarily against the canvas. I also thought about Karen Davey as an example of a painter who works in this idea through the idea of action painting, but she does it in a different format. In the activity of painting and through an act of performance, she works with a constant horizon, horizontal swaths and bright lurid colors and compromises the density of the application of the work itself. She is an idea of a 21st century artist that I was thinking about for that example. How do we situate painting in relationship to the practice, painting, sculpture, or performance? Practice varies from artist to artist. Some artists use from hand to head or actually use the entire body as a tool. While others may use a computer or a means of computer mark making, what is also left over is the evidence of where was I here? What comes to mind is American artist Cy Twombly. He blurred the lines between drawing and painting. The paintings consist of simple mark making, childhood marks which reflected and repeating into a kind of graffiti-like mark making or as an artist alone. The automatic drawing in his paintings consist of a nervous beauty, some of it within the context of the painting. He pushes our minds into a deeper psychological space and time. I also think about in the concept of sculpture, I think about Roxy Payne, who combines the idea of nature and the mirror of the effect of the organic man and man-made environments. In relation to the idea of performance, two artists who come to mind are Janine Antoni and Anna Mendieta. In Janine Antoni's Love Care 1992, she uses her head along a brush as well as using it as a concept of a tool. Her hair and loving care, depending on how you see it, dipping her head into the solution and dives behind and begins to slowly move through the head along the floor while she sits with her hands and knees. Moving her head into a mopping-like fashion, these marks are broad brush and executed. In Mendieta's work, I think about the piece called Body Tracks, in which she dips her hands into a forefront of blood and then drags them down along the wall, leaving a mark of a residue, which is like a wall, which is the residue, which is a Y-like shape. The drawing via the computer hand are distinct practices or should be seen or considered in tandem. I kind of see them in tandem in the concept of my own work. I work with both a vector file and a CAD file in which to be able to do works. Usually it's done with the process of cutting out the paper or the image itself and then scanning that image in which to make a vector file, in which to make a three-dimensional or actually make a two-dimensional or relief-like piece. Within the concept of the CAD file, it makes it easier for you to be able to get through the process and almost eliminates you completely out of the dialogue. What's possible for digital technology is opening the ideas of drawing in many forms. In the case of new media, it cuts down the new man hours. It creates a new concept. It's almost like the idea of the Industrial Revolution, how it changed the makeup of our world. When we develop a critical understanding and complex interface between the relationship between technology and mark making, or even the technology and the culture, I think of artists like Mark Tribe and Rena Jaina, who spoke in their book New Media. Themes that contemporary new media are discussed in computer art, collaboration, identity, appropriation, and surveillance, just to name a few. How does our constant exposure of virtual space change artists' approach working in two and three dimensions? I think of some artists born within the last 30 years, the concept of their way of thinking has completely changed. It's the simplicity has come right down to the cell phone, the idea of creating a context and be able to transform it from your computer within your hand and then transfer it into a main drive and then transfer it into maybe on paper or whatever medium you specifically want to use. I think about this idea in painting and sculpture and books and photos and magazines, TV programs and video games and several other virtual ideologies have come to mind. The cell phone is one of the presentations of digital imagery of any type. Unfortunately, though, virtual space is an art that makes an object look irrelevant to the two dimensions or three dimensions of that particular kind of work. Depending on the content of the cross, depending on the content across the via, whether it's virtual or the idea of a convenient way of working through the idea, I look at the concepts of what has happened with Facebook and YouTube as an example of how this has really changed. Then it says, what role does reproducing and navigating the world? The process to discover drawing is still important. When we are navigating through the world, ideas come to us through trial and error. Radical breakthroughs only happen in the act of drawing out an idea, whether it be on a cocktail napkin or whether it be on the finest piece of paper. Drawing is still the simplest approach to figuring out an idea. Cultural invention is the adaption of people using and passing through to others. We learn from the past. We extend our boundaries of human knowledge to future. For example, I'm thinking about people like Jean Genet, who wrote Our Lady of the Flowers, just using a pencil and old paper bags. And in fact, he ended up having that piece destroyed by a turnkey. Turnkey refers to the policeman or the individual who handles the actual jail itself, destroyed his first copy, and then he had to make up another copy. Another example I think of Mexican folk art artist Martin Ramirez. His huge pieces were in which he glued together newspapers, grocery bags, and medical examination sheets glued together with spit and potatoes. And still why he's in a mental hospital. The act of universal mark making is, I have an example from my own experience. In 1990, I was walking across the street with my family against a wall that had a tag graffiti markings across it. And the notorious gang called the Four Corner Hustlers had a particular mark that was basically determined whether you live or die. Crossing the street, we looked across at a group of young men who looked across at us and said, "You're dead." And as we walked, we realized that these indicators were the markings that truly would change us in a heartbeat. So we moved and moved from across the street. This is my example of navigating the conversation of the world in real time.
I have a lot to share with you, and I'll try to speak very quickly so I can get through everything. The first question is, how do we define drawing as an activity or a medium? Can drawing exist without material residue? Drawing is a verb and a noun, of course. It is an activity, a verb, and it can result in an object, a noun. It is not a medium. Mediums are materials, and drawings can be made in different mediums. Yes, a drawing can exist without material residue. Examples include light drawings and drawings with your finger on someone's back. I can even make a drawing with my hands using sign language. This is my form of fake sign language. Or even just think of gestures with their hands. Those are drawings. So I've come up with my own working definition for what drawing is, and that is drawing is recorded gesture. Of course, the two operative words here are recorded and gesture. Drawings can be recorded in material or in someone's memory. Gestures are extensions of the human body that can be made with the aid of a tool. A gesture, for example, can also include simply looking. Under this definition, a drawing can be made by tracking one's eye movements and recording those movements. I can make a drawing just by looking around the room. I've made a square. And of course, if I've recorded that with the aid of a computer, then you would see that square. And of course, examples of drawing with light. These are gestures that are recorded. Sign language, of course. Tire tracks. Shadows. Stick drawings, Matisse, of course. Dance, under this definition, is a drawing. These are gestures that are recorded in the mind and can be recalled in your memory. Second question, of course, is how did artists situate drawing in relation to other elements of their practice? I can't speak for other artists, but for myself, drawing is at the core of my practice. All my work begins with drawing. My images are developed through an extensive sketch process that results in a thoughtful, resolved, final solution. This solution is a digital, vector-based, iconic drawing that is then materialized and combined with other solutions that have developed in the same way. My final drawings are my base ingredients for all my work. And a few years ago, I developed a studio manual that outlines all the ways to make the work in my studio and all the tools that we use. And in this book, I outline my drawing tools, including all the different markers and all the different line widths. And also in this book, I talk about my drawing process. On the left, you can see how the sketches develop, how going through this sketch process, I'm finding the underlying geometry, and then I perfect those forms by making technical and mechanical drawings in the computer. This is another way to illustrate my drawing process. Again, ink on paper, then moving into the computer and, again, finding that underlying geometry, making all the forms perfect, and ending up with a drawing on the right, which essentially is a digital file. It's a vector-based image. All those images are then combined to make the paintings. This is a 6-foot square acrylic on canvas. So every little element that you see in the painting goes through this drawing process. So basically, the paintings are paintings of drawings. And then, of course, the drawings can be materialized in stainless steel and acrylic, and these are examples of those. And then I go further and produce more product-based works using those same drawings, skateboard, T-shirt, soccer ball. Question number three, are drawing via the computer and drawing by hand two distinct practices, or should they be considered in tandem? What possibilities do digital technologies open up for drawing in all its many forms? The computer is just another tool for making drawings. Curiosities and anxieties surround this tool because it is relatively new and is often perceived as a threat to traditional methods of making drawings. This has always been the case with anything new in any industry, in any field. And this anxiety is the premise for the question. And I'm almost embarrassed that we're addressing the question. Digital technologies, the second part of the question, allow for many new possibilities in drawing. Including but not limited to, with digital drawings, there is no original. The idea of the original drawing that exists as a singularity no longer applies, and drawings can be replicated infinitely with equal quality. Secondly, there is no quantifying digital drawings. The idea of quantifying drawings is an antiquated concept as it applies to digital drawings. It is senseless to say that there are X number of files or X number of copies. Digital drawings exist as computer code, allowing drawings to simply be information. This frees drawings from material constraints and allows drawings to exist in a more fluid dimension. There is no size with digital drawings, only relative scale. In virtual space, size doesn't matter. Rather, size doesn't even exist. The digital realm is not bound by the same space-time constraints as the material world. Therefore, drawings have no size and only exist in relative scale to each other. Digital drawings allow for multiple materializations. Digital drawings can be brought into our material world in a number of different ways. With my own work, I have my drawings laser cut out of acrylic, water jet cut out of steel, cut out of vinyl, projected onto screens, and printed onto film. In the case of my paintings, I'll print my drawings onto film, which I then use to make silk screens. I then push paint through the screens in different ways onto the canvas. And so by using, as an example, a body of work that I'm working on, have been working on for a few years based on women, you can see in a very linear way, I'm doing figure drawing, refining those drawings, going through that sketch process, finding the underlying geometry, then bringing the final sketch into the computer, making a perfectly geometric digital drawing, outputting film, and then making paintings with the film that I have made into silk screens. This is just a very linear example of how that sketch process works. And then again, these materialize as paintings, as sculptures, even as murals, banners. Even more on the product side, I've made a deck of nudie cards based on these women. Question number four. How does our constant exposure to virtual space change the way artists approach working in two and three dimensions? In the simplest case, I can create a virtual space that simulates the real world in order to better visualize what I have in mind for a painting, sculpture, installation. However, I still need to make decisions about the production of the work in the real world by going through the process of physically making the work. In this way, I am only using virtual space as a tool for creating work in the real world, as opposed to considering the work in virtual space, the work itself, which isn't something I'm opposed to. That's just not how I use virtual space. Even so, as a tool, it is extremely liberating to virtually test and go through many options when developing a painting, sculpture, or installation. These are a few examples. These are computer renderings of sculptures, and these are the actual sculptures. Computer rendering of a virtual space that simulates a gallery space when I'm planning out an exhibition, for example, and then this is the real installation. Another example of that, a virtual space, and then the real space. Question five, what role does drawing still play in reproducing or navigating the world? I do not believe the role of any art should be to reproduce the world. Art creates new worlds and invites people to be transported and invited to those new worlds. Drawing in this role is no different than it has ever been, and it is different for each artist. Go back and see question number two. Second part of that question, navigating the world. I took this part quite literally. In a more practical sense, when drawing is used in the service of society, which is different than drawing's role in art, then its role in helping us navigate the world can be found in public signage and wayfinding systems, for example. These are the kinds of drawings that personally interest me. These drawings tend to be systems-based and purposefully don't strive to reproduce the world, but rather create a new visual language based on the need to quickly, legibly, be comprehended and be read. The role of these drawings are to serve as symbols with reference in the world. And of course, these are just a few examples of signs and sign systems, wayfinding systems, extending into symbol systems for the Olympics, for example. These are some additional concerns I wanted to throw out there. What is the difference between writing and drawing? What difference does intent make in drawing? Are drawings made only of lines, or can drawings be made with shapes? Does authorship play a role in making drawings? So, for example, the difference between writing and drawing, of course, type and typography are based on letters that have been very carefully drawn. What role does intent play? We all know about elephants and chimpanzees, and what is their intention? Do they have real intent, even extending into children's drawings? And the idea of the tree is that we could attach a drawing implement to a branch, and when the wind blows, it certainly makes a mark, and that is a recorded gesture, but what is the intent of the tree? And then what is the role of the viewer? And certainly clouds and trees don't have the intention of creating these images, and so it's up to our interpretation, and obviously there's no intent there. And what was the intent of the creators of these? I'm sorry to include the desert drawings and the crop circles on the same slide, because we know that they're made from different alien races, but regardless, what was their intent? And of course, Matisse comes up again when we're talking about the difference between line and shape. The line, of course, maybe the scissors or the cut or the edges of the paper, maybe that define the shape, or are the actual shapes the drawings themselves? And these are some paintings I made in mid-90s when I was really concerned with looking at drawings that exist in the public domain, which are owned by nobody. Nobody had authored these, or rather, somebody had made them, but they belonged to anybody. They were, again, public domain clip art drawings. And I was interested in taking those and contextualizing them in a fine art context. And then I looked through all my notebooks and culled some ideas and random thoughts about drawing, and I won't go through them all, but I'll highlight some of them. Drink and draw, show all your work. Ready to be recorded and secured in time, etc. Anyway, thank you.
Yeah, I thought I kind of screwed up. I didn't know we were answering the questions that we sent in here in front of you. So I actually made something that took 6 minutes, but I'm not going to show it because we're doing this. So I'll try to go through this in 4 minutes and show 2 minutes of that thing instead. All right, ready, go. A lot of people have talked about navigation in relation to the first question. I realize that for me, the key thing about drawing is about not knowing. Mostly, I'm interested in not knowing. And so for me, drawing is not a navigation, it's a mediation. It actually technically is just something you do with a tool or with your finger as a tool. And that means that it actually mediates between the world and your body with your finger or hand as the, or foot or whatever, as the mediating, your body is the mediating tool in a drawing. And for me, what that primarily mediates between is the state of knowing things and the state of not knowing things. For me, not knowing is the most important thing about art. Number two, how do artists, blah, blah, blah. How do artists situate drawing? I don't know about other artists. I was only answering personally. I think I've always thought that there were drawers and non-drawers. Essentially, I feel like some artists are deeply drawers. They're people who, for whom taking a tool and essentially writing, I don't see any difference between writing and drawing. I studied Japanese calligraphy. I studied Japanese language before I studied art. So I started with a brush that was writing. And for me, I'm a drawer. Like, I only find out what I'm doing after I've done it and after I've drawn for a while and messed things up and didn't know. Then I find meaning. And I think for me, non-drawers are basically people who don't need to go through that process to figure out what on earth they're doing. Those are still artists, but they're not necessarily drawers. And I know somebody who's a good friend of mine whose paintings and my paintings are often likened to one another, but we're really different because she doesn't draw. I draw. I start with drawing. She starts with taking images and moving them from one place to another and tracing them and taking them out of context. That's a mediation. It's totally great art, but it's not drawing. And so she's not a drawer. The other are drawings and computer. Well, I'll come to that at the end. I guess mostly known as a painter, but I actually think I'm not a painter. As the opposite of Mark Bradford, I think I'm a drawer, and I don't think I make any paintings. I only make drawings. And lately, I've been really excited to realize that I can make art with my iPhone. So along with my paintings, I've now for about a year and a half or 2 years been making animated drawing videos to poems so that I can work with poets. So I take their poems and I actually draw from them. Then they, if they're working with me, then they rewrite, then I redraw, then we work together. Or I just take people's poems and just use them and make a video. And I'll show you 2 minutes. Number four, so anyway, for me, like, the digital has been a huge and profound way of opening time-based media, which is, for me, actually to unpack all the layers that used to be underneath in my two-dimensional painting drawing practice and spread them out over the temporal sequence. So that's been really important. Number four, how does our constant exposure to virtual space? I think a lot of times that the most important thing that I've noticed, because I've been working with the computer or with an iPhone screen lately, the most important difference for me is the concept of weight. When you take something into your hand, you feel the weight of it. And like with painting, it's maybe more specific. Like when you're using like a digital color palette, you can point to any color and it's all the same weight. You just push the screen. It doesn't feel like anything. You tap it. It's very unpleasant. I actually hate that. And I draw with my finger, with my pinky on my iPhone. That's how I make art with my digital thing. But for me, like, not holding the weight of something in your hand deprives you of a very profound quality in the world. I see that as a diminishment. I'm not a Luddite. I make art with my computer, but I actually kind of don't like it. And I think if I I like it, but I think it's a problem. It's a diminishment to me to press a screen instead of feel mineral weight, which is the weight of the color in your hand. I feel that's a problem and that we have lost something. What role does drawing play in reproducing? Question number five, not knowing things, touching things, finding out what you think and feel through bodily experience, and mediating between feeling and thinking, to me is crucial. Actually, it's political, and I think that it's an incredible loss if we don't not know and honor the difference between not knowing and knowing and thinking and feeling. So I don't know how to do this. I didn't see the mouse, sorry. So I'll just show you, I don't know, what do I have, 1 minute? I'll show you 1 minute of this thing that I just made. Whoop. And I hope that bar thing will go away. It's to a poem by Lisa Robertson.
A young woman looks openly out of the picture. A young woman looks openly out of the picture. Her experience of scale is always paradoxical. As for the unconscious, she is breathing in its Latin. Philosophy comes from her having difficulty. Her experience of scale is always paradoxical. When girls were flowers, this wasn't true. Her pronoun is sedition, unrecognized as such. The women is itself not a content. Her voice turns towards weakness and shame, and it pours down her face.
Okay, I'll stop it, because I want to
not... When it comes to flowers, she is parody.
Stop. I don't know how to stop it.
How did you...
Okay. Sorry, I just don't want to go over the time. Thank you.
I might need help finding my PowerPoint. Oh, this one? Okay, yeah, that's it. Okay. So I made a very basic PowerPoint presentation, as you can see. And my answers are very basic. And I think I do better with improv, but I will just read these because I can keep it clear and concise. So the first question, we generate lines wherever we go, but to use the word drawing without the trace of residue or the capture of an image is to use the word metaphorically. Drawing is the medium linked to the time-based activity. You can draw with your finger on the condensation of a window pane, but the drawing only exists until the image fades. The mark embodies duration, as any gesture does. A drawing can exist without a material residue if the image is somehow captured. An example that comes to mind are a series of 1949 Life magazine photos of Picasso drawing with a small electric light in a dark room. We saw these images earlier. The photograph contains the evidence. The drawing exists within the photograph. So I think I will go on to not that one, but this one. Okay, the second question. I will focus on my own practice to answer this question. Drawing is central to my practice, but I often think about it through sculptural ideas. As I draw, I carve away at a form, but it remains a virtual form. There's a limitless potential in thinking about a drawing as a prototype, or impossible prototype, for a sculptural form. A drawing can present multiple vantage points. A line on a piece of paper can be a tube through which something flows, and grounds can coalesce and fluctuate. This is an example of carving out an image. For me, image and material is often one thing, which could be considered a sculptural concern. Cuts and creases of material act to distort and continue or discontinue a drawn line. Overlapping panels or sheets of paper hide parts of images, which in turn create new images. Changing the angle of a two-dimensional object from a perfectly vertical image to an angled one alters the perception of the image to the standing viewer. This is an example of what could be considered a finished piece. And this is how they look when they're in a group, and some are sort of hiding others. Even when I'm cutting a material or situating an object in space, I'm thinking in terms of drawing. Drawing by nature is a performative act, and I utilize it actively and materially. Performance is an aspect of my process by way of drawing. Okay, question three. And I'm going to speak for my own work here again. And this is where I am right now, and not where I have been or where I'm going. I consider these two distinct practices that can be used in tandem. Both drawing with a computer and drawing by hand are methods of visualization. Sometimes I'll use a computer to see how something might look before I make a physical move to something that cannot be completely undone, or to save time and energy, like making a sketch for a sketch. Hand drawing is an engagement with friction. With hand drawing, you can erase, but you can't delete. There's always a trail of thought. If you choose to remove a part of your image, you leave a physical hole or the material trace of a cover-up. The ghosts of decisions are there to be seen. Oh, not that one. I put these in the wrong order. I was in a hurry when I did this. Where is it? View slideshow. Okay. Let's see. Maybe I'm repeating myself here, but with computer drawing, you have a clean getaway. You can retrace your steps. You can save it at different times in the drawing's existence, but is not self-contained in the way that it's not laid out for all to be seen at once. With hand drawing, I can only do something once. I use drawing as a means to find a form, and it is this newness that hand drawing allows me. It is my body's connection to the material that I choose to explore. I'm interested in the drawing as an object. Drawing with a computer removes my immediate connection to the object. For me, right now, computer drawing acts mostly as an aid to convenience, but it is not essential. I'm going to just go back to this image. And I was talking earlier about even when I'm cutting something out, I'm thinking about drawing. And this is a really new piece. But I think that can be seen in the edges and how the edges were cut. And how that interacts with the actual drawn forms. Number four, how does our constant exposure to virtual space change the way artists approach working in two and three dimensions? And I'll follow in from the last answer about computers. Most of the work I've been doing recently is very handmade, and I believe that working with one's hands is a type of thinking. It is the connection of the mind and body that the virtual space of the screen negates. Due to the instant access of images and information, artists are most likely losing some of their aesthetics of their localities unless they are consciously holding on to them. However, there is a beauty within the ease with which you can switch off the computer and return to life. There's a similarity I'd like to mention, that a drawing creates a virtual space in the same way the computer does. Both are projection or simulation of our own lived world. Both imitate the perceptual effects of objects or space, but the experience of drawing is a much slower experience. I think that slowing down to focus on a form or scenario is the most important part of making art today, as it always has been. Last question, what role does drawing still play in reproducing or navigating the world? I'm an artist working primarily with drawing, and for me it is a way to come to ideas and present them with a certain degree of economy. Drawing is a parallel to thinking and planning, and I don't think that that role changes very much. However, as the world changes, so drawings will develop in response to it. Drawing is a very immediate connection to the messiness of the natural world. Through its inherent dynamics, drawing has the ability to suggest the past and future while situating us in the present. If we stop drawing, we have lost our connection to the natural world. That's it.
Should I just leave this up here?
We'll leave this one up.
Okay, so my favorite definition of drawing is a trace of action, which implies that drawing's temporal, it's indication of past action and evidence of process. It can therefore be on anything and be made with anything if it bears indication of a physical encounter through medium, so a body, an instrument, or a hand coming into contact with a surface. Drawing, therefore, is of course an activity, but drawing as a medium, or maybe we could say drawing as a noun, is an index that's contingent on trace, touch, and mark. And I have to say, this is something I've struggled with for a long time as a curator with an emphasis in a major museum collection on drawing. But my definition, in many regards, is largely informed by what I think is one of the best essays on drawing by Derrida when he organized an exhibition at the Louvre in 1990, and it's called Memoirs of the Blind. And in that exhibition, what he did is he selected old master drawings of blind figures and used them as an analogy of drawing itself. You know, that is, that sight in drawing is always secondary to touch. That drawing is an act of memory and not one of inscription. And I really love this understanding because it has an emphasis, again, on the temporal and spatial aspect of drawing, the physical over the visual, and especially drawing, therefore, as a site of invention. Question two. Okay, this the issue of how artists now are situating their practice, and as a curator, this is an extremely hard question to answer. Aside from, again, thinking about drawing in terms of how all the artists have already talked about it as being core to their practice, that I really think the problem with this question is that it automatically puts drawing in relationship to something else. So drawing is put in relationship to sculpture or in relationship to painting, and that's something I don't think is always the case. The issue of the computer, and maybe I'm going to take a conservative stance here, but I really do believe they're two distinct practices. I believe the result of a drawing via the computer bears no indexical relationship to physical process, be it by hand or even a mechanical tool. And I think while there may be, you know, human interface in the construction of a mark on a screen, I feel that the result is indirect and only a representation of a gesture. And as a comparative example, I was thinking a lot about the question of drawing and printmaking. And in that way, I think we can kind of think about it in the same way. A drawn line in a print may have been made through the process or activity of drawing, but as a result, it's only a representation of a drawing, which is how I also understand computer-generated imagery done through the practice of drawing. And, you know, even if we go back, and I was thinking about, you know, the software like direct manipulation software, which is the type of software that was developed in the 80s, where the mouse creates reflects the movements of the hand. And that was first, again, used in the 80s, Mac Paint, Mac Draw. And those involve the mouse emulating the movement of the hand to create the visible results. And the thing is, in the end, the digital technology becomes the same thing as a drawn line in print, only a representation of a drawing. Virtual space. So I love this question four, because paradoxically, in terms of drawing and thinking about drawing in relationship to this major spatial shift that we're all having to deal with, I almost feel as if artists are going back to drawing in its most basic and primal application as almost an antidote or negation of this virtual realm. In contemporary art, examples I thought of was the kind of trend of the MFA outsider drawing, an emphasis on the compulsive, labor-intensive, repetitious use of line as another example. It's almost, I think, as if artists are committed to the idea that drawing is a more human form rooted in the real. In 2005, for another example, there was a great article in the New York Times and it was called Go Figure. And it discussed artist Will Cotton's weekly gathering of life drawing sessions, you know, which is the most traditional and academic way about thinking about drawing. And the tone of the article was that this seemingly anachronistic practice represented a desire on the part of the artist to reconnect to the basics. And to put this in a larger cultural framework, we might even think of the trendy return of you know, artisan goods or the typewriter or handmade craft. I really think within this contemporary moment, we're retreating from the virtual in search of authenticity. And I guess you could call that anxiety for sure. But I can't help but think that the idea that there's this renewed conversation about drawing itself is testament to the fact that drawing offers something more unique, intimate, and real. Drawing's relationship to navigating the world. The current project that I've been involved with in the last 4 years is doing Richard Serra's drawing retrospective. And so I'm answering it in these terms because this is the type of drawing I've been thinking about for so long. And it's this question about navigating the world and navigating the world now that has really been critical to how I've almost struggled to place Serra within a contemporary framework. And consider, you know, why are his drawings important now? And what do they mean to our understanding of navigating the world, if not his own process of navigating the world through his drawings? And in many ways, even the work he's currently producing is most clearly understood as coming, you know, we might normally think about his work, understanding it in terms of the moment that he began making, that was sort of process-based, minimalist generation as it was forming in the late 1960s. Yet for an artist of his generation who's continuing to be committed to exploring ideas of invention through the activity of drawing is significant because I believe through the work, which is, you know, big and physical and encompassing, he's almost rhetorically forcing us to encounter and look and absorb knowledge in real space and time, which I really think is the crux of the question about what drawing is. And by therefore demonstrating that you can still push the medium, push the activity, it's very much testament to the idea that drawing is still vital to providing a set of perceptual tools that again can almost stand in direct opposition to the way we're most often now bombarded with the types of devices that mediate our gaze and direct our eyes to a screen and not to the world around us.
Okay, so our final panelist today, Terry Winters.
Yeah, someone. My talk was inadvertently deleted, I think. We watched it happen. Yeah.
All right, wonderful. So I think you can just hit the arrows there to go forward.
Wow. So where do I hit forward?
The arrows.
Okay. I've used the questions to structure a presentation about drawing, so I won't be specifically citing each of the questions. Drawing is a form of exploratory data analysis, a calligraphic display of information formulated as pictures. This is an image of the young draftsman done by Nicholas Bernard Lepicile in 1772. Drawing is an animal activity, making marks and delineating territory. This is a view of Pechmerel Cave in southern France. Drawing is quick and easy, a simple picturing device. Drawing is for everybody. Kids draw, even presidents draw. On the left, a recent work by Julius Boxer Cooper, age 8, and on the right, a doodle on White House stationery by LBJ. Drawing is exacting. It's a precision instrument. This is James Ensor's Mirrorless Skeleton from 1890. Drawing is proximate, immediate, and intimate. These are Gerhard Richter's two small pencil drawings from 1999, 8 by 11 inches. And a bottom image is of Richter painting. Drawing is an assemblage of gestures, intensive forces expressed as physical signatures, two drawings by William de Kooning. Drawing is a haptic investigation, a merger of hand and eye, a view of Eva Hesse's 2006 exhibition at the Drawing Center. And in a sense, Hesse's objects function as drawing in three dimensions. Drawing is a demarcation of space, both on and off paper. On the left, Fontana's neon installation in Milan in 1951, and on the right, Walter Di Maria's Las Vegas piece from 1968, a mile-long drawing in the Nevada desert. Drawing is a picture of calculation, a way of seeing, of figuring. On the left is Melvin Way's drawing of ink and tape on paper from 1990. On the upper right, Joseph Boy's blackboard drawing from 1970. And on the bottom right, an unknown artist's AutoCAD drawing from 2010. Drawing is a description of imaginary dimensions. Hieronymus Bosch's Woods Have Ears, Fields Have Eyes from 1500 on the left. And on the right, an untitled drawing by Barnett Newman from 1946. Drawing is a document of existing conditions. These are two drawings by unknown artists from the 18th century. A magnolia flower done in England, and on the right, a chart of bleeding points from Tibet. Drawing is a projection of future events. On the left, Alfred Hitchcock's burning gas station, a scene from The Birds of 1962. And on the right, Mies van der Rohe's skyscraper project for Berlin in 1921. Drawing is a useful tool for application and amplification. On the left, Van Gogh's Starry Night from 1889, rendered as a drawing and as a painting. And on the upper right, Xenakis and Le Corbusier's Phillips Pavilion, done in Brussels in 1958. And the bottom right is a drawing for a sound and light installation done by Xenakis in 1978. Drawing is a register of psychic states. It's an immaterial evidence. These are two drawings by Lewis Wayne. On the left, it was done while Wayne was a popular Victorian illustrator of anthropomorphic cats. And on the right was a drawing done 15 years later as a mental patient at the Bethlehem at the Bethlehem Royal Hospital. Drawing is a real-world transcription, an aspect ratio of the actual and the virtual. On the left is a Calabi Yau diagram, which is used to visualize the... Sorry? Oh, my slide. Okay, drawing is still a real-world transcription, an aspect ratio of the actual and the virtual. On the left is a Calabi Yau diagram, which is used to visualize the hidden dimensions described by string theory. And on the right is a photograph of Mount Saint-Victoire, Cézanne's mountain. And I'm going to end with two drawings of mine. Recent drawings of mine. Drawing is a tonal language, a grayscale narrative of graphic features. Drawing is the prototype, the model and pattern. That's the last one.
despite our best efforts, we have ended up with not a huge amount of time. So I don't want to take up too much more of it now. But I think as a way of transitioning into an open discussion, that I would just say a few words about some things that struck me in the papers very, very briefly. So I think I was struck above all by the degree of consensus that there seems to be about what drawing is, and just to name a few of those things, that drawing seems to be as much about the process, or kind of finds its identity as much in its process as in its final result, and that by extension that it carries with it the sense that it comes from somewhere and goes somewhere rather than being achieved all at once. And I also kind of think about Deborah's point of fitting into that, the sense that it, you know, with your last comment about the sign of the game, that it gives that sense that it extends beyond itself into something, you know, outside in the real world. And that drawing is a way of figuring things out and posing possibilities that might not be able to be realized in reality without it. And finally, I think this is the big one, that comes up for many of you, and that indeed is even a requirement for many of you, that drawing is rooted in the physical gesture. And it seems like almost all of you would agree on this, except maybe Ryan, and maybe one other. I think Deborah also was kind of mentioning that drawing could be something that happens just in the mind, therefore that would not have a physical manifestation at all. So I think I would like to just throw that out there at the place of beginning, which is to ask the audience kind of, you know, what they feel about this. And considering all these different aspects of drawing that we also agree are kind of defining criteria, you know, why did physicality seem to be the defining criterion, or, you know, why not mapping or kind of tracing a mental path or these other things, these other themes that came up? And I guess by extension from this, just to bring up this digital, you know, the question of the digital, which can be sort of annoying, but I think it is something that it's something that I'm interested in and grappling with right now. So, you know, if this kind of these other criteria, such as mapping, is a valid criteria for drawing, you know, are there ways of using the computer screen, for example, to indicate an image's status sort of as a trace and then therefore drawing, even in those cases where we don't necessarily feel the friction of the hand? Or also, and actually this would be a question for you, Amy, I mean, do you feel like, so the video you showed us was made on the iPhone? Okay, so, and I know you just actually didn't come out so much in what you said. It was written in the responses that we read. We had the privilege of reading even more than you heard. And Amy was talking about how the importance of, you know, the physicality of using her finger. And I'm wondering if you feel like that physicality remains in the final result somehow, or not. And is it valid for you because it was there in the process? Or kind of, you know, would it be valid for you, you know, is there a way of making that sense of process palpable on the screen so that the screen can carry some sense of weight, or a kind of trail of thought that Jessica was talking about, even if it's not, you know, so immediately evident as it is in drawing. So that, I'm kind of throwing that out there. Someone can jump in. We have microphones that Nova can pass around, and Joanna. I can't see who you are back there, but maybe the person way in the back there. It's dark back there. Okay, so she's here.
Is it on? Yeah. So something that came up for me, I took personal offense to some of Ryan McGinnis's comments, and I really appreciated the political position that they take. And I loved how sort of sex and death came up in different ways in this conversation, and difficulty. And I was recently leading just like a drawing group, sort of struggling with feeling guilty about the fact that I was drawing from life, and feeling like wondering about its relationship to the virtual. And I got up close to the skeleton, and I was trying to figure out the hand, and I'd never actually looked at the hand that closely. And at the tip of the fingers, that there's this thing called the apical tuft. I don't know if people know this, right? And I was like, it's flat, right? It's like it's flat like a cave. And that was just really exciting to me because it seemed to have some potential for this sort of reconciliation or meeting of the two-dimensional or virtual, or the virtual and the two-dimensional in drawing, or the three-dimensional of my body and its significance in relation to drawing or the plane or so. Yeah, thank you.
I feel like I want to ask you a question about to describe the flat thing. You just.
It's just a very the thing that's standing there.
Oh, yeah. Right. That's cool. That two things came up for me with Ryan, Amy, everybody. But anyway, I kept thinking about Saussure's definition of thinking about language in terms of the sound imprint, not the sound itself, but the sound imprint. And I thought of Marshall McLuhan in Gutenberg Galaxy talking of correlating electronic media with the oral, both AU and OR, rather than the visual or optical, as opposed to print in the Gutenberg sense, which he correlated with the visual. And then I started to come back to this question of the material. So I thought, okay, if we have the sound imprint, if we somehow or other this all extends to, and that works in terms of the digital or virtual because sound exceeds the visual in the same way that Diane was talking about the consequence of the mark, exceeding the mark. But then it's all predicated on memory, which somehow or other brings me back to the material. And you know, how long will we remember without the material prod? And one little footnote on the fingertip is that Charles Olson, in his perspective verse or something, talked about a physicist who was also at Black Mountain at the time, I can't remember, about the mind, the nerve, new research in the 50s on sort of neural receptors all being right there in the fingertip, that's that point of contact is where something's realized. So,
but
I don't know.
It really is rooted in the it's like a biological thing. In
a way, right.
Can't be, sort of did anyone in the audience respond to those comments? Or, I guess Amy and some Ryan, they were addressing.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything useful there. We should move on to something that could be of use.
Okay. All right. Do you have any?
I think one thing that could be of use is to define a distinction.
One thing that could be useful is to define the distinction between the digital and the virtual. Because the virtual is something that does exist inside of the imaginary space of drawing and is a big part of what needs to be realized or embodied in a drawing. So I think that's a distinction between digital, something that's digital, the digital and the analog, of which drawing is very much, for me, anyway, something that's an important part, an important product of human agency and not a product of the kind of metric space of digital technology.
There's a whole thing mentioned earlier about authorship, I think you did, Ryan, mm-hmm. Which brings back to the whole basic of connoisseurship, which no longer requires an activity since Bernard Berenson's, particularly after his incredible hive lifestyle and several corruption led to the way he lived his life. As you know, that was the case after he discovered Giovanni Morelli. But I think the way in which we also associate to connoisseurship had to do with almost like rotology, like the way that a slip of a hand is as revealing as the slip of the tongue. Mm-hmm. That's the reason why there's no such thing as two signatures are identical, fingerprints are alike. There's always that amazing distinction that is so powerful because it brings back to the whole premise of how modern art came to be, which took place in 1830s, when Ang Khandala Kwa was going to head to head. I mean, that was a famous case right there. The reason why I'm saying this, because why there was this debate between the differences between neoclassicism, defender of the tradition and so on, and the you know, irreverent, nonconformist Dalai Kwa, who would willfully sacrifice the purity of drawing for the demands of, I would say, drama that he depicts. There was one singular case where Ang told Dalai Kwa that you could never draw to save your life. And in response, I'm paraphrasing, because the critic Ketio Tore recounted this very instant. In response, he said, it's true that I can't draw at all, but I must say that I can easily finish a drawing of a man from the time he fell off the third floor balcony and when he hits the sidewalk, and you, monsieur, is still rendering the ears. So I think the reason why I think it's interesting to recount again, Cézanne and Picasso both identify with Frankhofer, the protagonist in Balzac's great short story, Unfinished Masterpiece, who in effort to unify the purity of line, dignity of form, and excitement of color, ended up destroying his painting and killed himself as a result. You guys remember? So anyway, the point is that Picasso, he was the opposite of Cézanne. Cézanne say that I search as I am painted. Picasso say the opposite. I don't search, I find. So why is that interesting? Because I think it was you also say it can be both verb and noun? Well, I'm not sure about that. This is the interesting thing. Because in 2002, I think, in the winter, Laura Hoffman curated a show at MoMA called Drawing Now, in which in the text, it's a particular introduction, I think, she tried to create or organize 8 propositions covering sign, nature, ornament to fashion and comic and so on. And she argued all the participant artists, we know who participated in it, were those who invested in drawing that were imagined, an act that imagined before it was drawn, as opposed to being discovered while you do it through the process, right? Like she cited out Richard Serra and his generation of artists as somebody who believe drawing is a verb, whereas artists today, many of them, invest the idea of actually it's not a verb, it's a noun. So where does that fit in? As already indicated with Dalai Kwa and I think it's very interesting to bring that up. In terms of execution, connoisseurship, and how one identified it. And understand the particular, you know, magnitude of the work.
Thanks. I have a question, and it's not really an answer, because I don't have an answer for what drawing could be or what it is. But my question has to do with multiplicity, and someone gave an answer that perhaps the multiple takes something into the realm of being a print as opposed to a drawing, which would negate digital media as a drawing activity. And I would like to suggest that the multiple has exceeded definition, that its current state with social media has taken it into kind of a ubiquitous state where everything's a multiple. And nothing escapes being a multiple. Any artistic practice engages the multiple. The artist is constantly thinking in terms of a multiple or using a multiple. At some level, during their methodology, they're looking at a book, they're looking online, and they're engaging a multiple somehow in the creation of whatever they're doing. So in that way, you know, even people who participate in Facebook are creating multiples constantly, and everyone's doing it because they want to have free exchange, which is the premise of drawing in the first place, is to convey some message to another person in your absence. That's my question. Right. I'm saying that has to be part of the question. Yeah, can we be more inclusive with our definitions? I mean, not get rid of like drawing with a pencil, but like a bigger.
Right, yeah. Right. Well, it seems like Brian was arguing for that.
Right. The point that I was making is that drawing can exist as just information, as just a code, because, and again, you know, we each have to start with our own definition of drawing, and of course, mine, as I told you, is drawing is a recorded gesture. Yeah, I'm sorry. Drawing as a recorded gesture. The recording is the computer code in the case of digital drawings. And as a code and as pure information, it is not singular. I don't know if that's interesting or not. That's just the way it is.
Yeah. Oh, I just had a few comments. They're more comments, so forgive me if I'm not very eloquent. But I wanted to lead on from what Ryan said, because I think one of the things that I picked up on was the notion of intent. And I think, to me, that's a very important thing, because everybody said lots of things that I agreed with, a couple of things that I disagreed with that I want to mention now. But most importantly, I think the intent of the person or thing who's doing the drawing is really obvious when you look at the thing. And, for example, something that Deborah said, I agreed with many things. One thing I disagreed with, and it was a bit of an aside, she said that a drawing on a cocktail napkin and on a piece of vellum, it's the same thing. And so, of course, as a liberal person, progressive person, I'm like, yeah, you know, everything's a drawing, yes. But actually, no, because when you're drawing on vellum, you're doing it because you want to show it to someone because it's nice. You're not just doing something because you need to remember this great idea you just had and you just woke up from a dream. That really is a drawing. And a lot of the drawings that I come across in my life, I mean, I'm drawing now in a sketchbook. I'm writing down what people are saying. On the other side, there's a drawing that my accountant showed me about capital gains tax and how it works. And then there's actually drawings related to my artwork. I happen to write a lot. Now, one of the things that a few people mentioned, but Ryan especially, was, is writing drawing? Now, that's a bit like saying, is music drawing? Well, at the end product, no. But most people, when they sit down to write, just start doodling things. I happen to write stories by drawing the story, you know, the narrative arc, like you see in screenwriting books. And at that moment, I think it's definitely a drawing. And the intent, to get back to the beginning, is really important. For me, the best drawings are the ones, like the White House drawing by LBJ, because it's kind of gross and it's so raw, and that to me is what's great about a drawing. And the more time we spend doing it, the less raw it becomes. And just one thing about mediation, because I think this comes back to the idea of virtuality. As an aside, I've just been trying to do watercolors because I thought, oh, this is fun. And so I go online, I try to learn some techniques. And one of the things I've noticed with watercolors is that everybody's watercolors after a while start to kind of look the same. So everybody tells me, you know, oh, too many people use SketchUp to create their exhibitions and they kind of look a bit SketchUp-y. The same is true of a lot of the traditional techniques. You have to understand that any tool, whatever it is, kind of forces you, it points you in a certain direction. And a good artist knows that and enjoys it and knows when to use it and when not to use it, I think.
Yeah, and I think there's an interesting in terms of each tool having its own kind of forms of resistance.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're just different forms of resistance. Is that
what you say, all of the life? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, there's definitely. No. I'm talking about the amateur stuff. I'm saying that when you start picking up a tool and you just you do what it does naturally, mm-hmm. ends up kind of looking the same. And that's. Yeah, it's dangerous. But I would also just agree with, I'd like to disagree with what Michelle White said about perceptual tools. I don't think drawing is about a perceptual tool. I think it is more related to information, as Terry mentioned.
Well, she was being specific about the different, let's say, a line, a drawn line, and
she was being specific about a drawn line and a printed line. Hmm. Which, like the way Kandinsky had wrote that book on point, plane, and line, remember?
Right.
Extrapolate the differences between
It's about still about how to draw something that is a visual image. And drawing is a lot of the time not about drawing a visual image. I mean, when you're trying to figure out an equation and you're doodling, or Joseph Beuys is explaining something, he's not explaining something that is visual. He's explaining information and ideas.
Right, but it requires so many different ways and technique material yields. And I think it's useful to have everybody talk from their own personal perspective about it. I think that's more useful. It's not so much the salvation in which we think about how we negotiate with drawing, especially in today. I just think that when you see something so incredibly surreal, it generates something about the person's touch. It comes back to the touch, a sense of touch.
I think that's a romanticism. That's
how romantic can one get?
No, if you see a streak of urine on the street, it's powerful because you know someone just pissed on the street. But it's, you can draw in SketchUp. That's something I'd like to say. And because your intent is not to make something from it, you're just thinking aloud. And I think that higher quality, the kind of thinking aloud, not knowing, which Amy mentioned, is if you know SketchUp, for example, I'm just using this as an example.
Yeah,
you can
I think
tell that.
I mean, I like what Amy say about it. There's draw and non-drawer. I think that's a very succinct way to identify the differences right there. There's people who love drawing and people who don't. You want to make some comments further on that? No? Somebody.
Hi. Just a quick one. Most of my answers were covered by everybody else up there. There's one thing I was thinking about just in relation to the first question. As opposed to painting, for me anyway, drawing's primary purpose is not to make a meaningful object. It's not goal-oriented. It's experiential and descriptive, communicative. Its luxury is that it doesn't aspire to be art. This is, again, how I look at it. And my experience with that drawing group is very much the experiential part of that. I know we've all of us discussed how there's something almost esoteric about that activity, and we don't know why, and we don't have to know why, but it's just a meaningful experience, and without the necessity or expectation that something, that an art object is going to come out of the practice.
Hello. My question is actually a little bit related to Will's, and it's for the curators on the panel. And I just wanted to know if you make a distinction when you are looking at a body of work between work that is a sketch for something later or work that is a drawing as the end means. So do you categorize them hierarchically as one is inherently more meaningful if it's, you know, the end result? Or?
I don't think one is more meaningful. I think part of what we do historically, and especially if you're dealing with an artist who's no longer alive, it's you're trying to figure out which category it fits in, which can be very interesting to do. So I do absolutely. I look and I try to figure out the difference, but usually I think it's trying to figure out where in the process it is, and that to me yields the most interesting information about what the final intent was.
And I'll say, I guess your question, too, is also putting a hierarchy in terms of decisions about display, for example, in an exhibition. And that's an interesting question because, for the Richard Serra show, for example, the notebook drawings, which are his most traditional sketchbook drawings, are starting the exhibition. And in a way, they have served an interesting role with, you know, watching public interaction because for the viewer coming in, it's the most graspable way of thinking about drawing because it's the most traditional sense. And I feel like that gives a grounding. So when you go into the rooms where drawings are wrapped around the walls and done on canvas and paint stick, which, very much challenges what we normally think about drawing, those notebooks have given a kind of, again, a grounding to understanding drawing in its most expanded sense of the term.
I guess expanding on that, drawing historically has been kind of this plan for a finished product that's completed in a separate medium. So in a sense, has escaped that finality The other mediums kind of are stuck to that eventually have to show this in a gallery. So I guess my question is whether a final drawing has to lead towards a final piece of art, or in a sense how the way Lee Krasner cut up her old paintings, can they become this continuous medium?
So you're only saying can he become...
I think that's up to the artist.
Well, yeah, I mean, it came up in Amy Silman's work, the fact that before you have this, what essentially is this oversaturated painting on one frame, you open that up to 20 frames and suddenly it becomes a minimalist piece.
Two quick things. One, to me, the only real distinction that has come along with the addition of computer technology to this discussion is the invention of the undo command. That, to me, is the only ontological difference between drawing with a computer or drawing with any other tool. And I think that that's something that we still haven't quite reckoned with. Like that I see students a little bit confounded by the idea that there is not an undo for a piece of charcoal. And I think, you know, that's something that really goes to the specifics of the material. The other thing I would say is that, you know, the virtual discussion for me, which I agree with Terry, has gotten like collided up against digital media and all these other things. That to me is a discussion that is more appropriately one for the venue. That to me seems because the real question there is what's the proper way of the drawing center representing that drawing activity, if it is in fact being currently presented in a really locationless medium, a medium that doesn't require a location. And that to me seems like a tough question that you have to that you have to answer. What is the value in a situation where people no longer necessarily feel like they have to go to a location to have a particular kind of experience? How do you, as a venue, as an institution, make the case that they have to do that? Or is the idea to come up with some sort of a branding, a virtual branding of the of that experience that is then somehow relatable back to the drawing center? And it seems to me like that's a discussion that might actually be more fruitful for you.
Can I respond to that? I mean, I actually have I think I have strong feelings about those things, about the first thing that you were talking about. I actually don't, with all due respect, I really disagree about the undo command. I mean, I draw with my finger digitally, and I also draw with my hands in a traditional manner with brushes and pencils. And it's totally different. There's not just undo. There's the command C, command V, command X. You know, there's the possibility of replication without like actually trying to translate a line from to the next line. There are so many aspects of drawing that I work with every day now in digital media that are completely not the same. I think that your simplification is really not productive, actually, because it sounds nice to say, oh, there's the undo command, but I mean everything about the smear, the dirt, the like fact that when you run your hand across, you know, charcoal, it puts that material onto your skin, and then you can make another thing with that. Everything about making a work, and I'm not valorizing that as better in any way, but I actually, what I was talking about when I said that there's a something of a diminishment, I only said that because I think that there's a dirty mess quality that comes along with the traditional ink and mess and liquid and pour and spill and stain, and I really think that that's all quite different. And I think of drawing as a similar to the lines coming out of a spider's ass when they're making a spider web. And it's just that is quite different than if you took your finger and drew even a scratchy line. Like that thing coming out of your body is inherently phenomenologically different than the line that comes out of your finger when you touch a screen. And I'm not saying it's better, but I really disagree that this undo command is the only thing that like distinguishes. So in terms of the venue, I have no other thing, but I wanted to passionately say that it feels quite different to draw from scratch, I guess. I mean, I draw from scratch, but I mean I'm not even disagreeing with Ryan. I'm just saying what he said was really interesting, but I think that there is a phenomenological difference in resistant materiality that is not as similar. It doesn't occur for me in the digital.
Yeah, you know, I absolutely agree. Nothing beats, you know, ink on paper or charcoal on paper or you know, physically moving. That's the most exciting thing about drawing for me. And, you know, believe it or not, I actually don't like having to work on the computer because for me the process is it's a bit removed and it kind of boils down to click, wait, click, wait, click, wait. And the technical drawings that I need to make on a computer are so tedious. It's not that exciting, but nothing beats just physically, you know, being physically involved in the process of making a drawing.
But I really think it's what Claire said, resistance, and I feel like material resistance is everything.
Mm-hmm. And I think I still wonder, you know, can there be some form of resistance?
Totally. But I was just saying that that material resistance is a different one.
Yeah. I think, in a way, I feel like there's a supposition here that anything digital is going to be viewed on a screen, and that there is no synthesis between the two. And I agree with you, Amy, but I don't think that's the sum total of all the work that's being done in the two realms. So I don't think it has to be an either-or. I think that the digital is still relatively young, and there's a kind of worshipful attitude toward learning the correct process, and that as time passes, people will start to break the rules more. And in my own practice, I'm using digital things that I'm printing out, and then I'm making a mess out of. So I think there's room for an amalgamation of the two. That is probably already taking place in the art world, but it involves not being quite so worshipful toward the digital.
Hi, Heidi, would you say that in a way artists are in the business of vexing those definitions?
Yes, thank you. Well said.
One of the things that seems to have emerged here that I think is most exciting is that the boundary conditions of what counts as a drawing is being determined dynamically by artists, and that the kind of baggy, amorphous thing which is drawing is something that would be an institutional challenge for institutions such as the Drawing Center to be making. And I guess I would like to propose some idea in which what the Drawing Center does with regards to these boundaries is drawing. And that perhaps, you know, over the years, somehow, this consolidation of what's interior and historic to the medium and what, you know, would have to always be constituting a changeable limit is another form of drawing.
Why don't we take one more, and then we only have, I guess, just 30 minutes left in the building, so if we want to have a reception, we can transfer the
We only have 30 minutes left in the building. So if we want to have a reception, we can transfer the conversation over to the wine table. But Kenza, I know you had your hands up. Why don't you finish?
We can't leave the post-Deschampian mode. You know, we can't go back, you know, and we're there. And, you know, Deschamps did not make that urinal. And it's still a powerful artwork. We still draw. We draw with all kinds of things. We draw on things, around things. And I think, you know, there's a kind of duel happening between people commenting and between commenters, between how it is we're shaping images toward the future, whether or not there should be some human index. I mean, there's always a human index. But, you know, essentially we're not necessarily having the language to comprehend how it is that people begin to shape images that have impact for people, whether or not we're using a computer where we throw the computer itself against the wall, or whether we're using it to throw something against the wall. And that I just think there was kind of this weird dichotomy between whether or not we should slap ourselves with paint and slather ourselves, or whether or not we should process ourselves. And it doesn't seem to me like that's an useful continuum.
I just want to add one more thing. I think it's very interesting when Pollock was going through the... Okay. No, because you have to spark it up. That's how you kind of have it. That's so nice. This show. You know, you got to spark it up.
Thank you. That was pretty sparkly.
You were
sparking.
Spark
it up.
That was sparking. It was getting very sparky, but yeah. Unfortunately, there's only a certain amount of time. A little bit.